This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers, anyone else who wants to join us, get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, today, I'm real excited about today because we got a great guy here. We've got a lot in common. We both have kind of technology backgrounds. We both are musicians. And we're also, we started kind of late in life and getting into real estate. He is officially an old dog, too. So, you know, you got to love him. But our guest today is Mackel Smith, likes to be called Mac. He's worked for Microsoft for over 20 years now, and before that, spent almost 20 years also in the computer industry with DEC, Digital Equipment Corp, and a global chemical company. He started investing in real estate in March of 2015. That's like a year later than I started, which is interesting, with the goal of acquiring 25 units over the next 5 years. However, by the end of 2015, he had already acquired 13 units. And last year, he started working with a partner and acquired another 12 units. So, you know, he's already surpassed, it looks like, his goal here. This year, so far, he's only picked up a duplex, but it's still early. His goal with these properties is to both provide additional retirement income as well as have some projects to play with during retirement. I love it. Currently, Mac and his partner are looking at acquiring some larger properties, 25 to 100 units, and potentially looking at syndication deals. He recently bought a lake house. That sounds like fun. He got a great deal on it, by the way, and continues to work on it in his spare time. And I was saying, where is the spare time there, Mac? Mac is 56 years old, married with 3 grown children, and looking to retire in the next few years. Well, Mac, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thank you, Bill. I'm excited to be here. You've had some real heavy hitters on the show. I hope I can match up to them.
Oh, well, you already do in my book, Mac. Definitely. It sounds like you've had a great run of things. You're looking at real estate like a lot of us are as a means to be able to supplement your retirement. And also, you know, me, I can't even imagine what retirement is, to be honest with you, because, you know, just not doing anything, maybe collecting seashells, but it does not sound like fun to me. So I love it, you know, because the challenge is involved. You know, not only is it fun to get in there and get your hands dirty, but also, you know, just being able to manage the properties, be able to, you know, watch the equity grow, do things to generate more money, you know, and it's just a real exciting new area, at least for me, in terms of educating myself and trying to learn this crazy real estate investing world. But tell us how you got involved and exactly, you know, why real estate? I mean, you're a tech guy. What kind of brought you in? Give us a little of your background.
Well, I kind of got started in sort of a goofy way, I guess you could say. I bought the lake house out there a couple of years ago, and I didn't realize it was a huge house. So my house that I moved from was about 3,200 square feet, and this one's almost 6,000 square feet.
Gee
and
whiz!
It's a big house. And when I got out there, I didn't realize that the utilities were very expensive. So the first summer I was there, I think the electric bill was about $950 a month, and it is not serviced by gas, so I had to buy propane for it, and the propane costs are about $4,000 per year. And so the first thing I did was I put solar panels up on the roof, and it looked like a pretty good deal. It was about a 12-year payback on those with the rebates the government gave you. So I thought, hey, this is great. So the next thing then was I need to look at geothermal. But when I started looking around at geothermal, it was going to cost me about $100,000 to put geothermal in out there because of the way the land is. And, you know, I really just sort of started thinking, I'll bet you for $100,000, I could buy a rental property and probably make enough cash flow off of it to pay, you know, some of the utilities. And that's kind of the impetus that got me started thinking along that path. And it was about a month after that, I started looking for properties. And about a month after that, bought my first property. And sure enough, it's way more than paid for my utilities for the past couple of years.
God, that's great. Now, you mentioned a lake. What lake are you on, if you don't mind us asking?
Well, I live in St. Louis, I work in St. Louis. My house is actually in St. Clair. It's about 35 miles west of St. Louis, and it's a really small lake. It's about 100 acres, and my house butts right up to the lake. I got a great deal on it. The guy had an indoor swimming pool.
Oh, my goodness.
So I've been going through and fixing everything up, and I've got it just about the way I like it. It's just a wonderful place.
Now, you can just keep it as a vacation home, or are you thinking after you retire, you might want to move in there?
You know, I actually was just going to use it on the weekends and then kind of use it as a vacation home, but I ended up selling my house here in town, and we're actually moved in out there now.
Really? Wow. What a kick. What a kick.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, man. So you can work on it 3 a.m. if you want, you know?
I can.
If your wife will let you on.
Right.
Power tools buzzing in the background. No.
Exactly.
Oh, what a kick. What a fun little adventure there. Well, you're obviously, you know, besides just getting a property that you pay utilities, you sounds like you've gone a little bit more than that in terms of what you've acquired so far and what you're looking at acquiring. So what kind of made you change it up a little bit and figure, well, you know, do you have like a bigger long-term goal? I know initially you said, you know, 25 units in 5 years. Have you kind of revised that a little bit?
Yeah, I really have. You know, I bought the first property and I thought, well, let's see, you know, how this kind of goes. And I only had it for a couple of months and it was cash flowing great. It was, you know, it's a really good property. And so I bought my second property just a couple of months after I bought that first one. And then I started thinking, man, this, you know, both of these things are giving me pretty good cash flow. I think off those two at the time, I was probably cash flowing about maybe $600 or $700, you know, per month. And I thought, holy cow, that's a pretty good income. You know, a few more of these and I could really supplement my retirement. And so that's when I started getting serious. And after I bought the second one, I actually started listening to podcasts and really sort of figured out how this thing worked. Went and set my company up. And then that's when I started getting more serious about acquiring the rest of the properties. And so that's how I ended up with 13 that first year. And then the second year, I'm pretty active on Bigger Pockets. So I was out there on some of the forums, and I'm always having a few people that are interested in the St. Louis market that reach out to me and want to have lunches or, you know, just coffee or something. So I happened to, one of the guys reached out to me and wanted to take me out for drinks and sort of pick my brain about real estate. And so we probably visited for a couple of hours and he said, hey, if you ever get to a point where you want to take on a partner, you know, I'd be really interested in doing that. And so at the time I really wasn't, because things were going around, you know, going along really well for me, but I sure enough found a couple of properties that looked like they might work well in a partnership and called him up. And so we've been partnering on some as well. And that's, you know, we're just kind of moving along.
That's great. Now, is he, In terms of funding, are you taking funds from your savings? Do you have like a self-directed IRA, you know, investing in these properties? Are you, you know, borrowing? Are you paying cash? I mean, what sort of your fund flow there?
Yes to all of the above. So, no, you know, the first ones, I've been lucky enough to have had, you know, good careers with Microsoft and with Digital Equipment Corporation. So I've had some funds that I've had invested in the market for a long time. And so when I first started investing in real estate, I kind of looked at it as, well, I'll just move some of the funds I've got in the market into real estate and sort of diversify my holdings a little bit. And so the first property I used just to, you know, maybe $30,000 as a down payment out of those funds. And then the second property I actually went ahead and paid cash for. And then after that, you know, I would cash in Microsoft stock or some other stocks, and I would sort of acquire properties that way. But before long, I got to where I was, you know, I was beginning to get more and more in real estate, and I was not being, I was afraid I wouldn't be as diversified as I wanted to be. So actually, whenever the partner, I took the partner on, one of the things that he wanted to do was provide the down payments on the properties and have me, you know, he would finance my half of the down payment. And so I would actually go get since I had a good relationship with bankers, I'd go get the loans in our company name and do all the paperwork and get that piece all done. Plus I had the relationship set up with the property management company. So I just kind of pull it into the rest of the properties I had. And then he's a very passive investor. And it works really well that way. And the other thing I've done on a couple of properties as well is, you know, I told you I paid cash on that one property. I eventually went and used it as collateral for a line of credit. So I've got a line of credit against that property that I can use to buy additional properties and then, you know, fix them up and refinance. And then I also took some additional Microsoft stock and used it as collateral on another line of credit. So I've got just multiple ways to go to go get cash and play with real estate.
All kinds of creative funding there. So you're, well, looking at ahead, you know, in your bio, it mentions how, you know, you're looking maybe up to 25 to 100 units. You know, that's definitely gets into a different ballpark, and you're talking properties, you know, multiple millions of dollars. And so it's, you mentioned you're looking at syndication as a possible means on those properties to be able to fund those. Is that right?
It is. I've got, you know, I've made a, not only in my real estate things that I've been doing, but also I've been around the tech industry for a long time. So I've met a lot of people that are invested in the stock market as well. And so a lot of them have watched with interest in what I've been doing with real estate. And so, you know, a number of them have expressed interest and get involved with me, you know, in different ways in the future. And, you know, the properties I've bought, they've all been multifamily. I haven't bought any single family properties, but they're plexes, triplexes, and quads. So I haven't bought anything bigger than a quad yet. But the problem with that, and I could continue to do that, to be honest with you, and just, you know, get 30 or 40 houses, however much I wanted to get. But, you know, the thing you run into is you have multiple, you know, you have multiple taxes you have to pay on those things. You've got insurance that you have to keep up. You've got multiple roofs that all that's under. And there's just, you know, some efficiency and scale whenever you start moving into some bigger properties. And so the fact that I've got good contacts in the tech world as well as in the real estate world, and I've got sort of the smaller properties under my belt, I think the next move is to move into, you know, a few larger properties and sort of get some of that economy of scale.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I realized too. I started off actually a couple of single families, a couple of duplexes, and I found out really early on the duplexes, you know, I'm paid the same amount for the duplex that I did for the single family, and yet I get twice the income. I only have one roof to deal with. You know, I just, you could see it on a real simple basis, even with a duplex. So I totally get that, and I'm in the same frame of mind now, really, as you know, I totally respect any folks that you know, want to do just single families, that's great. It just, for me, you know, it's, it becomes sort of a bookkeeping nightmare just to be able to track all of these, not only, you know, the expenses and, you know, you've got vacancies and what have you, but, you know, all those property tax bills. I'm in some cities where it has a city property tax and a county property tax.
Right.
So I got two property tax payments there. And then I have, you know, plus the insurance, plus, you know, whatever else you need repaired. And I mean, it gets really, really nebulous after a while. You've got all these different places you've got to track. And, you know, for one person, it gets kind of, now I have property managers that help, which really makes it different. Do you manage your own properties or do you have property managers?
No, I've got property managers. I've actually got two property management companies. I just used one for a long time. And then I started thinking, you know, I probably ought to mitigate my risk a little bit. So
right.
I pulled in a separate company, and then I can, that gives me the ability to sort of play them off against each other from time to time. You know, if I get a new property and I want to see if I can get a better deal, I might say, hey, I've got, you know, a new property. Who wants to manage it the most, and what kind of deal will you give me?
That's great. Well, you know, in the time that you've been doing this, and it looks like, you know, only a couple of years here, you must have encountered some mistakes, things that you've done that I don't look at mistakes as a negative thing to me. I think it's a great learning vehicle and a great way to learn. Do you encounter any sort of your biggest mistakes so far that, you've learned from, maybe you can share with our listeners that they might also learn from?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest one I made probably was I had a duplex that was a two-bedroom bottom and two-bedroom on the top. And I listened to my property manager. He said basically, hey, you know, if we take that front room and we add a closet, we can actually make that a three-bedroom apartment. And that will get you an extra $100 a month in rent. And I got to looking at the apartment. I thought, holy cow, you know, I can probably build that closet for, I don't know, a couple of $100. And so I was thinking, man, that's a great idea. The thing that I didn't think through, and you know, the thing that you have to really think about in whatever market you're in is the time of year and the type of property that you've got on hand, right? And so I didn't think about or really even realize that going from a two-bedroom to a three-bedroom probably puts you into a different tenant base than I was used to. And so a three-bedroom, what you normally find, at least in St. Louis where I invest, the three-bedrooms are normally families. And this, the time of the year that this was happened to be about end of October. And so if you think about it, school's already started. People are pretty much settled in. You know, the chance to move someone in, especially a family, after school started is pretty low. And so had I left that the way it was, and I was getting about, you know, $550, $600 a month rent, and I was looking at maybe getting as much as $850. And so by going ahead and putting that couple of $100 in and making that a closet and doing a little bit of other work, I really put myself out of the market for 5 months. So I didn't have a renter in there for 5 months until school actually was close to being, you know, out, and then I could place a renter. So, you know, it's something that I now sort of step back and think about before I jump in and say, oh, well, let's make some extra money here. I want to think about the actual tenants that I'm going to get and what time of year it is and some of those other things. So, I cost myself a little bit there, but not a huge loss. And like you say, I've learned quite a bit from doing that.
Yeah, that's a real good point. You know, and a lot of people don't think about it, but there really are seasons for renters. And you were also moving up to the holidays there. You got November, yep, December, which traditionally are one of the worst rental periods to find new renters. So that probably added on to that too. A good point there. How about biggest success? What thing did you do that really turned out maybe even better than you thought in your investing?
You know, I've got to say that the first two houses that I bought, even when I bought them, you know, I bought them under my own family name. So I bought them under Mackle Smith, eventually moved them under my company when I wanted to make sure I was protecting those assets a little bit. But those first two purchases, I would say, are probably the best things I did. And that was, you know, I didn't even do a ton of analysis on them the way I do, the way I analyze properties now. I did look at them, though, and say, you know, these are high quality properties. They're finished off nicely. I think I can put some decent people in here. And I thought what the debt service was going to be on, you know, as I was buying them, I didn't really think about all the things that I would think about now, but I knew that I could make pretty good money off of them. And those things have just been awesome assets for me. I had to put very little into them. And they're basically just cash cows, and they both were done, you know, finished off really nicely. And I've had the same renters in there since the very beginning, and they've just been great buys.
Oh, that's great. Now, you mentioned you kind of looked at the properties a little bit differently as time went on. Did you have like different criteria when you first started, or did you sort of develop that as you went along in terms of what you're specifically looking to get out of it in terms of cash flow, you know, what maybe your cash on cash return, things like that?
Yeah, really, I didn't think about any of those. Well, I did think about cash flow because I wanted to make sure that I was at least getting enough money to cover utilities back at the lake house. But I didn't really think about, you know, things like capital expenses versus operating expenses. I did have the idea of, you know, a lot of people would look at, hey, I'm going to make a $100,000 investment and I want to see what kind of return I'm getting off of that. But you're really not making that investment. The bank's making $80,000 and you're making a $20,000 investment. So that's when you start thinking about what's my return on that $20,000 that I actually am putting at risk myself, it's a little bit different than looking at, you know, the whole $100,000. And so I didn't think about those things at the beginning. I thought more in terms of, you know, sort of like a homeowner would. I've always just bought my own home, and I felt like, you know, I'm spending this amount of money. And the reality is it's not that amount of money. You know, the money that you're putting in, your own money, is the cash on cash return that you need to be a little more concerned with.
Now, are you buying older homes, newer homes, C category homes, B category homes, or do you just have sort of a variety there?
No, I've got a pretty good farm area down. It's actually in the city in St. Louis. They're all, I would say that they're C plus properties, and they're all in the same general area. There's an area that's sort of just off the up and coming area of downtown. And it's the place where things are moving toward, and that's where all my properties actually are. And right now they're sort of C properties, but I would say that most of them are probably at the, in terms of finishes and everything, they're probably close to the top of that C area. And so as it gets more gentrified and get different class of people kind of moving in there because things are developing, then those properties are actually, they'll, you know, the rest of the properties will kind of come up to the same standards that those are.
Do you put a lot of work into the properties in terms of rehab or upgrades?
It kind of depends. On the first few that I bought, I didn't. You know, after that, I started looking at more, a little bit more undervalued properties, which meant that, you know, as I bought them, I ended up having to put, like, on most of them, I've had to put roofs, I've had to do tuck pointing. The last, well, not this last one, but the one before this one that I bought, I actually paid cash for it out of one of my lines of credit. And the idea was that I was going to go in and do some rehab. So for that one, I actually refinished floors, put up new cabinets, you know, moved a couple of interior walls, made one upstairs. It was a duplex with one bedrooms in both, but the top one could actually be made into two bedrooms. So I did make that into a two bedroom. So a little more work on that one. And, you know, of course I bought it for like, I think I bought that for 49 and I had it reappraised at 82. So I did pretty good there.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. Yeah. Are they older? I didn't, you didn't mention,
yeah,
the older homes?
They're all, I think the newest one I've got is probably 1920.
I love it.
Yeah, they're pretty old.
Yeah, I've got a couple of old ones too over in Indianapolis. So I actually like they build them pretty well, you know, especially if you get a brick, something that's brick too. That's great.
Yeah.
But you know, just looking at this, you know, we've got folks that are listening that, you know, are either toying with the idea or maybe they've got a property and they want to move forward. You know, what kind of advice would you give to, you know, those other 50 plusers out there? Because, you know, we're concerned. We know we're going to have a fixed amount of income in a retirement. And, you know, we've got our nest egg and we want to really be careful with that because, you know, you just, you know, you want to make a good decision. What advice would you have for those 50 plusers out there that are considering getting involved and how would you recommend that they do get involved in real estate investing?
Well, that's a good question. I tell you, the thing that I would say is you know, a lot of people, I think, look at real estate and they think, hey, that may be risky for me. But for me, the real risk to me is when I've got my money in the market and I really have no control over what someone is going to do with their own company. And that plays, that could make the funds I have invested there go up or down with very little control that I have over that. But when I look at real estate, you know, I've got a lot of control. Yeah, I've got it leveraged and I've got, the bank owns more of it than I do, but really I have a lot of say in what can be done with that. So I feel pretty confident. And I think folks that are thinking about real estate as a risky sort of investment should think that it's really not that risky. I mean, there is a potential to lose a lot of money if you don't do it the right way, but if you educate yourself right, and you buy things the right way, I think it's a really good way to supplement your income. You know, and I would say if you're just wanting to get started and you're, over 50, what I would suggest is, first of all, make sure that you educate yourself well. Make sure that you listen to podcasts, read books, whatever it takes to make sure that you understand the concepts behind what you're doing and how to evaluate the properties themselves. But don't be afraid to jump in. And even if you end up partnering with someone else, that can be a good way to acquire properties as well. But for me, I think it's a fantastic way to supplement your income, either pre-retirement or post-retirement.
That's great. Now, you obviously made a shift in your approach, starting off, looking for a property to pay the utilities in your lakefront home, to looking at getting in some serious apartments. What do you really see as the future for your business, your real estate business now, in terms of where do you want to see it in the next 5-10 years?
I think I've probably got another 10 years run before I decide that I want to kind of be more passive. So, I'm thinking I'd like to acquire some bigger properties. I think if I can get a 50 to 100 unit property in the next year or two, and then eventually end up with something along the lines of, 250. If I can end up with somewhere around, 300 units all up, by the time, 10 years has kind of come and gone, and I can leave something for my children and my children's children, then that's kind of where I want to be.
Wow, that's great. Well, you and I, same boat on that one. I definitely, I think it's a great supplement to retirement, but to be able to have that legacy to hand off to the kids is something that's really, that can go on for generations if you also train them to educate them on how to handle it. But that's great. Just out of curiosity too, so everything's in St. Louis, is that correct? Or okay, and you want to primarily stay in that area?
Well, so the deal is the properties here are relatively cheap. The rents are relatively high. And so it makes sense for me to continue to invest here. If I were in a different situation, if I were in Southern California, like someone I know, I might seriously consider, investing someplace else. But, I've got it pretty good here. St. Louis is a really good market for investment. And I feel good about being able to go. There's something to be said for being able to drive out and look at those properties count your blessings there from time to time.
That's great. Well, I mean, St. Louis is on, the number of lists in terms of top emerging markets. And, it seems like there's good, strong job growth and a pretty solid economy. And, like you mentioned, the cheap properties, high rents. I mean, that's a lot of the right stuff to have in place.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So I don't know why you'd want to move. That sounds fantastic. Well, we are zipping along here on time, and I want to get a chance to get some more questions in on you. We have this little section we call the wrap it up section, where I ask you a series of quick questions, and you answer as quick as you can in terms of resources and so forth that you might be able to share with our listeners. So if you are ready, we can go ahead and do our little wrap it up area. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
You know, I'm just going to say, I think everybody's read it and everybody says it, but Rich Dad, Poor Dad really changed my life quite a bit. So for me, that's got to be it.
I think that's got to be required reading for anybody interested in looking at real estate. That's great. How about your favorite business book?
You know, Gary Keller wrote The One Thing and Jay Papasan, and it's made a big difference in the way I look at things. So I'd say The One Thing.
Oh, that's great. Great. I love that book too. Jay Papasan's going to be on the show soon. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be like right around the same time, a couple of shows actually before you come on. But great. How about most valuable website for success?
You know, for me, it's got to be BiggerPockets. That place is just awesome.
Yeah, I got the same answer. they're fantastic. I love
them. They really are.
So much good information. All free, too. You know, it's just great. Okay, you're tech guy, so you might have a good answer for this. Favorite app?
So, you know, the one that I use the most and I get the most value out of is Mile IQ. Have you heard of it?
What is it called again?
Mile IQ.
Mile IQ. Okay. I'm not sure. One where you walk and it tracks Fitbit or something? No.
No. This is
your car mileage.
Yeah. Right. It runs in the background on your phone, and then you match up the mileage that you've got to get, you know, going against your properties. It's really simple to keep track of your mileage that way. And that used to be a big hassle of mine to try to keep track of it, and it completely alleviated that for me.
That's cool. So you just click it, and like when you start and or something, or push a...
Have to do that. It runs the whole time in the background, and it basically comes up and says, hey, after a while, it sees, like when I go to church, it auto classifies that as an errand, as, you know, going to church. And then when I commute back and forth to work, it knows that I'm going to work. So it doesn't, it assigns that as personal miles. But if I do something outside of that, then every week it sends me a reminder to go and update those so I can keep track of them. But nothing to remember when I take off or when I leave. It just runs all the time.
God, that's great. That's a great Mile IQ. Okay, that's a good one. Very good one. I knew you'd have some cool, you know, thing out there. Okay. How about your favorite quote?
Fail to plan or plan to fail.
I love it.
You're going to do one of the two.
That's great. That's a great quote. Wow. Well, and our final question here, and this is sort of our hypothetical apocalyptic question. Okay, let's say something happens and you lose everything, all that wonderful Microsoft stock, your houses, your everything, and all you've got is $1,000 in cash. Okay, what would you do with that money to try to rebuild what you had lost?
I tell you, it's all about relationships. So for me, I would, you know, whatever dues I needed to pay to be part of a local real estate investment group, I would pay those dues. And then I would take the most successful investor there out to lunch a few times and just start kind of make sure that I was making the right connections and then start building my real estate up that way.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You are so right on there. I think to me, it's all about relationships. It's, you know, that it's so funny because, you know, the people that have been there and done that, that's the first thing that they say is, I really don't need the $1,000. You know,
right.
I mean, maybe I have to pay for coffee or lunch or something here or there. But really, it's connecting with people. And that's such great advice. Wow. Well, this has been fantastic, Mac. You sound like somebody I definitely want to, you know, get together, get my guitar out and jam with you.
There
you know?
You
know, I mean, now you play, it looks like in the picture you play, is that like a uke or is it a mandolin?
A mandolin. So I play mandolin, harmonica, guitar, bass, and I've even got a violin at the house, but I don't play that in front of anybody.
I always want to learn violin, and I just could never do it. But I love playing with people that have that play violins. I mean, it's just so cool. So, well, that's great. Well, if I'm ever on St. Louis, I'll make sure I bring my guitar with me here, and we'll have to jam a little bit, do some of that old bluegrass stuff, you know.
There you go.
Well, great. Well, Mac, you know, there's probably people listening to this that are, you know, would probably love to talk to you too, or at least communicate with you in some way or another. How could people reach you if they want to, or find out more about you and what you do?
Well, you can go to, I've got my business website, Maxin Capital Group. It's M-A-C-Y-N. It's a conglomeration of my name and my wife's name, Mackle and Cynthia. So Maxin Capital Group. That's maxincg.com. You can get my email there, or you can reach me on BiggerPockets. I'm very active on BiggerPockets as well.
Great. Well, you know, you know what comes next, right? So I can never really prepare my guests for this. It's just something that just happens, you know. We just had I don't know if you know, we had our Golden Howl Awards. And
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But, but you know, it's fun. It's fun. It shows that, you know, real estate guys really aren't that boring, and that actually we can do fun things too. But we're going to go ahead and let you close out our show with your best old hound dog howl. Now, are you ready for this, Mac?
I'm ready. I'm looking around. I'm sitting in my office in Microsoft, so I'm looking to see if anyone's going to be walking down the hall here. But yes, I'm ready.
Steve Ballmer or somebody's going to come walking by or something. You know,
or they'll think the old guy's having a heart attack in here. We got to come save him.
Call 911. All right, Mac, just go for it.
All right.
Oh, I knew if you went in that office, you'd do it louder. I know.
But would, yeah.
We'll give you a pass on this one.
All right, great.
Well, thanks so much, Mac, for being on. It's been a real adventure. I want to keep in touch too. I'd love to check in with you, you know, maybe next year or something, and hear how it's going. And
Great. I'd be happy.
Yeah, see if you picked up that 50 or to 100 unit, or if you're in syndication or whatever, you could just kind of share a little bit more of your journey. I think people learn a lot, you know, from your story and others where that have just, you know, started out and make it sound easy. So it's great. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's never too late to start. You know, I listen to all the young kids, and I think, man, they've got a huge future in front of them. But I also think, you know, it's never too late. You can always start anytime.
I believe the same thing. And for those that are a little bit, you know, apprehensive too, you know, find a partner, find somebody else to go, you know, maybe go in with. That's another way to sort of alleviate the risk aspect if you really feel there's a risk there. But I think, like, I agree with you that if you do your homework, you can never guarantee the future. You just don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, you know, you educate yourself well enough, you buy under market, you do a few things in there that'll help buffer you should there be maybe another recession or something that hits like it did, you know, a few years back. Then you can still get through it. So it's just a matter of you know, educating yourself, learning, and then taking the leap, and maybe starting small, you know, with a you know, duplex or even a single family. So, Well, that's it. I want to thank you again, Mac. I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of the things you guys could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us really means a lot. Keep in mind, everything we've talked about here will be, you know, summarized in our show notes. Any links to, you know, books and apps and things that we talked about as well will be in there as well. So don't worry, you didn't have to write that down. And you can access our show notes at our website, olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And that's where the show notes are. You just look up Mackel Smith as our guest and you'll find the show there. So that's it for today. Remember, cash flow is king, real estate investing the means. And until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.